And so we will open a public hearing on 2693. And Dan, if you could tell us a little bit about the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What House Bill 2693 does is it allows rural fire protection districts to retain tax revenues in urban renewal areas if a municipality is authorized to impose a special levy or if the urban renewal plan is adopted after the effective date of this bill. It directs a municipality to impose a special levy on all assessed property within the urban renewal area for the amount of the tax revenues retained by the rural fire protection district. Specify a special combination method for division of ad valorem property taxes in a municipality governing an urban renewal area and a rural fire protection district. Takes effect on passage, applies to tax years after July 1, 2002. Municipalities fund urban renewal projects from dividing out the increase in tax revenue from the urban renewal property by using funds to pay indebtedness for the urban renewal area. These separated tax revenues diminish overall tax revenues realized by the various taxing districts within that municipality. Municipalities have three options to raise required revenues: property tax with authorization to impose special levy for any shortfalls. The second one is to have a special levy to meet all obligations, and the third one is from property tax with an authorization to impose a special levy for the amount of the tax revenue foregone for the urban renewal area. Gradual expansion of urban renewal programs to less populated municipalities has caused some rural fire protection districts to meet the revenue requirements through retention of tax revenues where municipalities are authorized to impose a special levy. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, attached to the staff measure summary is that portion of the Constitution of Oregon, Section 1C, Article 9, where it talks about financing redevelopment and urban renewal projects. It's in the left-hand column. It's the second paragraph down. Again, it's Section 1C. Also attached to your packet is ORS 310-150, where it talks about the three different categories. This is not probably of primary importance in this bill, but I did want you to understand that in the computation that tax assessors will use to divide out that property tax for the taxing of rural fire district, they will use these three categories in dividing that up. Again, I don't know that it's entirely germane to this committee, as this bill has a referral to school funding and tax fairness revenue committee. The third thing that I've attached to your staff measure summary is testimony from the Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies that indicate that they think some improvements need made to the bill. And I'll let you read that here for just a minute. The bill may have revenue impact, and again, it has a subsequent referral to revenue, and it may have a fiscal impact, but no statement has been issued yet.
Thank you. Do we have a witness list on this bill?
Representatives Schrader and Zona are going to try to come down.
I don't see them. Should call their offices.
I did.
You did?
I did. Okay.
We have somebody from the Camby Fire District. Ted. Tell me your last name. I'll go with that.
If I handed that to you guys,
you can hand it to the committee administrator. He'll take care of it. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Okay, my name is Ted Coons, and I'm the fire chief of the Camby Fire District. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for entertaining me today. What I'd like to do is speak in regards to House Bill 2693. And I'd like to express the support of the Camby Fire District for this bill. As many people have dealt with over the last few years, the urban renewal districts are becoming really popular in certain communities. While they were intended to, I believe, help revitalize downtown areas of older cities, they've been used for many purposes. In Canby, for example, the urban renewal district was implemented to do two things. Number one, establish an industrial park, and secondly, to revitalize downtown. The fire district doesn't oppose either one of those, but one of the issues that came about during the creation of the urban renewal district was that the fire district would lose a lot or forego a lot of revenues during this period. I sat on the task force to put together the urban renewal plan. And one of the things that we hoped we'd find as we went through this was a way for the urban renewal district to help support the fire district. In a town like Canby, which is 13,000 people, any loss of revenue to the fire district is very significant. Unfortunately, the way that laws are currently written right now, an urban renewal district, the only thing they can do is bricks and mortars projects. In other words, they can build stations, they can do things like that. Well, in Canby's case, we have a fairly new fire station. It's only 5 years old. And beyond that, structurally, we really don't have any other needs. So the urban renewal district ends up to be a strictly a negative issue for us. And we forego the revenues, and we do not achieve any more value for funding the fire district. In Canby's case, a lot of the district, actually almost the entire industrial and commercial zone, was included in the urban renewal district. So what it does is it puts any new growth as far as fire district is concerned on the back of homeowners, and we don't feel that that's appropriate. Another issue that we had with the urban renewal district and the formation of that was that the city was able to put together an urban renewal district without, well, they had to come talk to the fire district about it, but basically the input the fire district gave didn't mean anything. They could do it with or without our support. And we find that to be alarming, that tax revenues that were authorized by the voters to go towards fire protection and EMS services could be used in a manner other than what they were authorized for. We as a fire district can't do that with our funding. But yet another political entity could do that. And that's exactly what happened. An example is we have a Fred Meyer complex that went in. And the fire district forgot, I believe, $22,000 worth of revenue last year. We received basically about $100 to protect $4.5 million complex. Right now, Milgard Manufacturing is looking at moving into Canby and establishing an $8 million structure. Because the property is currently EFU, we're going to receive probably less than $100, and we'll forgo over $13,000 in revenue. And quickly, as this industrial park or commercial area is built out, you're going to find out that we lose a lot of revenue. And when you need to add firefighters and paramedics because your call volume's gone up, and for us, 78% in the last 10 years, that's a hard blow to take. We're looking at losing in excess of $5 million over the 20-year life of this plan. So I'd like to again express our support for House Bill 2693. And I did submit a written testimony.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know, sir, any other exemptions that are present in the urban renewal law?
No, there aren't any.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. From a standpoint of the new development areas for fire protection, could the case be made that they were blighted areas?
It all depends on whose definition of blight you're using.
I guess you'd have to use a statutory definition. But.
Well, that was one of the difficult issues that we came across, in the fact that the definition is pretty broad, and the fact that productive farmland, in the case of the city of Canby, could be termed blighted areas.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
The reason why I'm asking is because one of the things that the fire district could do would be to form its own urban renewal district, correct?
Not that I know of. I haven't received any information from our attorney in regards to that being possible.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking, kind of furthering that, is that is that if you could determine that this new Fred Meyer area was a fire blighted area, in other words, they had a greater protection need than what can be provided by the current services that you have, therefore being blighted. I'm just wondering if the potential exists for you to, for the fire district to say, okay, we're going to declare an urban renewal.
Well, if I'm responding correctly, it addresses municipalities of which the fire district isn't one. We're a special district.
Okay.
Secondly, when the statute, also in the statute, it talks basically in regards to capital improvement projects or bricks and mortars projects. The only people that can really be hired under the statute are plan administrators and folks to market the plan. So we wouldn't be able to hire a firefighter or a paramedic underneath that.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bates?
I assume, Mr. Chair, this is going to be referred to a revenue, and it will be done so on a non-recommended basis. We'll be able to look at it there and make a decision at that time.
That's correct.
Because we'll have people there from the revenue department that can guide us in some of the intricacies of tax law. We've been through this with many other bills already this time, and it is complex sometimes. So I would recommend that we do so. How do I say that?
Thank you for your recommendation, Representative Bates. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do I need to sign this? It's already signed in.
No, you're fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Michelle, is it Deister or Deister? I'll get it right one of these times. City of Oregon Cities.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. I had prepared quite an extensive background, but in the interest of time, if it's helpful, I can just skip over that and cut directly to the chase. Basically, the League of Oregon Cities opposes House Bill 2693 for the following reasons. We feel that the temporary costs of urban renewal should be borne by those who will benefit from the plan. The benefits of urban renewal go beyond the immediate plan area. Where there were urban renewal plans in place before Measure 50, House Bill 2693 creates an additional tax burden for property taxpayers in the municipality that adopted the plan if this bill were to be enacted into law. And this bill opens the door for other taxing districts to request an exemption from the division of tax, thereby undermining the effectiveness of urban renewal. And lastly, the existing urban renewal process does allow for input from the public and affected municipalities. As I mentioned, urban renewal has benefits beyond just the immediate plan area. Improvements resulting from urban renewal can create infrastructure, eliminate blight, and attract investment. New jobs are created for residents in surrounding areas, not just the municipality that established the district. And urban renewal improvements create additional revenue for other affected taxing districts. They do forego it for a period of time, but they get the opportunity to collect that once the bonds are paid off for the urban renewal project. Because these benefits accrue to many, we feel that it is appropriate that affected municipalities cooperate to make urban renewal a success. In many circumstances, House Bill 2693 would exempt rural fire protection districts from the division of tax for urban renewal. To keep existing urban renewal plans solvent, the municipality that adopted the plan may increase the amount of its special urban renewal levy by the amount of the fire district's taxes that would no longer be divided. This creates a higher tax burden for residents in the municipality. It basically shifts the burden, even though, as I mentioned previously, the benefits accrue to surrounding areas as well as just to the individuals in the municipality that established the district. Again, no revenue is lost. It is simply forgone for a period of time. Passage of this bill would open the door for other taxing districts to request a similar exemption, creating a still higher tax burden for the municipality and thus undermining the effectiveness of urban renewal. And lastly, the urban renewal planning process provides for input by affected municipalities and residents via the public hearings process. Urban renewal is a local issue, and the local community needs to come to a conclusion based upon its own particular circumstances about urban renewal. And an excellent example of this, I think, actually did occur in Canby when you look at the results of the previous election. There was a newspaper story several months ago in the Oregonian that talked about, you know, efforts to sort of put the brakes on the urban renewal district area in that city. The citizens of Canby have basically spoken through the election, made a decision perhaps not to go forward with a full urban renewal plan. We feel that because urban renewal is a local issue that affects local communities, decisions regarding urban renewal should be made at the local level and not at the state level. So, for these reasons, the League of Oregon Cities opposes this bill and urges a do not pass recommendation. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not made up my mind, so don't try to read anything into my question, pro or con. I'm just simply seeking information at this point. You mentioned that other taxing entities might ask for an exemption. Could you give me an example of what those other taxing entities might be? Police, for example?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, as you know, taxing districts often overlap. So when you draw your urban renewal plan area, you could have school districts being affected, you could have library districts being affected, you could have the counties as well as the cities. So those are some examples of, you know, a situation where that might occur.
Okay, can I follow up?
Follow up.
Okay, thank you. The other question that I have is sort of the idea that this affects rural fire districts. So in urban areas, ostensibly, there wouldn't be a rural fire district, there would be a regular fire district. Is that correct? There are 22, it said in the revenue statement, rural fire districts in Oregon, and that mentions farmland. Is there ostensibly, from League of Cities' perspective, a difference between a rural area where there's a municipality and an urban area that might be doing urban renewal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, there are some cities that contract with fire protection districts for their fire service. And, for example, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue serves the Tualatin area.
Okay.
You know, and actually I have the city administrator from Tualatin here with me who might be able to speak a little bit more precisely about that. But there are some special fire districts that do contract with cities to provide fire service.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garrard.
Hi, good afternoon. In the particular taxing districts that are under construction, if you make the fire district exempt,
mm-hmm.
what effect is that going to have on the other districts? Are they going to lose revenue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I'm glad you asked that question, because the urban renewal special levy, as it was created after the passage of Measure 50, is subject to Measure 5 limitations. So other instruments to pay off bonds, et cetera, are not subject to that $10 per thousand special cap. And this actually is a special levy that is subject to that. So it could cause the municipality to go into compression.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Schrader will not be testifying today, likely. I've received a note from his staff indicating that he is in budget issues. I don't know if this is a hearing or what, but he cannot come right at the moment. So we'll just keep moving down our witness list. And it looks like Steve Wheeler, is that right, with the City of Tualatin?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the Smart Growth and Commerce Committee, my name is Steve Wheeler. I'm the city manager in Tualatin, Oregon, and I'm also the administrator of the Tualatin Development Commission, and I'd like to speak to you. I'll take 2 or 3 minutes. I thought it would be helpful to give you a local perspective on this bill. I am speaking in opposition to HB 2693. The critical basis of opposition stems from the fact that I believe it will weaken our urban renewal districts in Oregon in general and Tualatin specifically. And I'll talk about our Levittown project area, which has been very successful in spurring productive job growth and preserving the environment in Tualatin. There have been similar successes in other districts throughout the state. Tualatin is served by the Tualatin Valley Fire Protection District, which is classified, as I understand it, as a rural fire protection district. And that gets to your question. Actually, we don't technically contract for it. It is an independent taxing district that provides service, and it is in an urban area. If the fire district is allowed to retain its portion of property taxes, I believe other taxing jurisdictions, such as schools and the county, could also request similar treatment, and then the viability of our urban renewal as a program will be jeopardized. The Levittown District was formed in 1985, and at that time, all local taxing authorities were informed and participated in the formation. It's my understanding that that is a requirement before a project is established. The project area took in 377 acres of blighted land, and to date has constructed about $6.7 million worth of public infrastructure. That is streets, sanitary sewers, water, and drainage projects. With that seed money, we have attracted 8 companies since that time, and they currently employ about 1,050 Oregonians. Among the larger companies are the Central Corporation with 511 employees and Japanese Aviation Electronics with 215. Our provision of infrastructure funded through the project area was a critical component of their decision to come to Oregon and Tualatin. We also, through this district, have participated in a project to preserve and enhance the environment. In partnership with the prior landowners, we created and enhanced 25 acres of wetlands. By so doing, that allowed us to receive permission to fill additional land and put it to economically productive use. Finally, and probably most importantly in terms of this bill, we recently attracted to the district Novellus, which is a California firm that is a key component supplier to Intel. Within a year, they will have 1,000 employees in Tualatin, making them our largest single employer. When they finish with their site development, they will make $500 to $700 million in local investment in buildings, parking facilities, and landscaping. That's something we anticipate will take the better part of 5 to 10 years, but that is a huge investment. And that doesn't include the equipment they'll bring. An essential component in our ability to attract Novellus was our ability through urban renewal to continue to develop the necessary infrastructure, such as street connections that we need to make, intersection signalization and related street improvements, and water and sewer line upgrades and capacity enhancements. If we cannot complete these projects and fulfill our commitment to Novellus, and that could happen if we don't have the full participation of the redevelopment project area, we will have a major problem. We're negotiating development agreements with them at this time. That's why we oppose HB 2693. And thank you for the opportunity to testify, and if you're willing to take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Kremel. I was going to be disappointed if you didn't have a question.
Thank you. Well, I thought of a question I could have asked the last witness, but then since this witness is from the cities.
There you go.
Then I thought I could just go ahead and, or from a city, I could just go ahead and ask him.
Just one.
Mr. Wheeler, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Is there a tool available that would allow the urban renewal district to return certain properties to the tax rolls sooner than what the urban renewal plan calls for?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
That's not to say it doesn't exist, but our plan, and I think that the required plan, is when you finish your list of improvements, you shut the agency down, and then you do return it to the tax rolls. And I'm interested in that as a city manager, because I want that productive tax dollars returned to the city when we finish our development. I don't know of anything that can make it happen on a piecemeal basis or earlier than I'm aware of, anyway.
Okay. And then follow up, if I may.
Well,
the cooperative effort that you mentioned, wasn't that part of the requirements? I believe it was Senate Bill 122 from about the 95 session. Is that, or am I thinking of the wrong bill?
122 required, as I recall, I don't know 122 specifically. I got here just after it was passed, but I think my understanding of redevelopment law is that it always requires the full participation of taxing entities. And the best time to work those issues out are before you establish a project area. And that's, again, with schools or the county or whomever might be impacted by it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Wheeler? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2693? Seeing no one. We'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2693. What's the committee's wishes as regards to sending this over to revenue? Representative Bates has suggested that we send it over with no recommendation. Is there...
There's a second on that.
Second? Yeah?
That'd be fine.
I'd support that, too.
Sounds good. Okay. In that case, we will open a work session on 2693, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, can I make a motion that we move House Bill 2693 to revenue with no recommendation?
Representative Bates has moved that we move House Bill 2693 to revenue. That would be the, what is it, the School Funding and Tax Fairness Committee slash Revenue mm-hmm. Committee? Yes?
Yeah.
With no recommendation. Is there any discussion?
My only discussion point, Mr. Chair, would be that... having been in local government and utilized an urban renewal plan myself, it is a very viable local tool that can be used when you have, particularly when you have an area that you're trying to create a positive redevelopment in. The nice thing about urban renewal districts is it is the one government program that we have probably in the world that has a beginning date and has an ending date. The only way it can be extended beyond its ending date is when the agency takes a positive action to actually amend their plan to show what additional projects they're going to do that would require them to have more time. So that the one thing is with the other taxing districts do have a date certain by which the plan is going to end. I'm real hesitant to, I'll vote in favor of moving this over to revenue and let revenue kick it around, but if it were to come to the floor, I'd be very hesitant to support it.
Thank you, Representative Crowell. Anyone else? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin excused. Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Canope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Thank you. Is Representative Witt, can put him down for absent? Or?
Got him as excused.
Oh, you got him as excused? Okay. We'll put him as excused then. He's probably listening on the internet and I'm in trouble. House Bill 2693, having received the required number of votes, is moved to revenue. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2693 and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2858. If Representative Butler should show up, which he could do at any moment, we will recess our hearing on 2858, and we will move to Representative Butler's bill, which would be 2556. So those of you who are testifying, keep that in mind. So if I cut you off, that's probably the reason. Looks like we have Ron Fox and Jerry Hoffman here from OECD. And while they're coming, we'll have our good administrator here give us a rundown on the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2858 creates the Office of Small Business within the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, appropriates an unknown amount from the general fund. It also has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. The suggested amendment that is attached in the packet, in your packets, creates a small business council to consist of 9 members appointed by the governor. This council would act as the official advisory commission to the Office of Small Business. This amendment would also include coordination among state agencies and fostering coordination of their various programs. Currently, small businesses account for 95% of the total number of businesses registered in Oregon. Various state agencies affect emerging and established small businesses within their respective areas, as listed on your form. There are small business development centers established in a number of locations to include community colleges in Oregon for the purpose of advising and assisting emerging and established small business. In 1998, the Governor's Small Business Council was formed from public and private industry members for the purpose of recommending changes in state programs to improve small business development in Oregon. They found barriers to small business included a lack of knowledge about state programs to assist small business and a lack of coordination by state agencies in developing and implementing administrative rules. The council recommended the establishment of the Office of Small Business to provide a single source coordination agency for emerging and established small business operators seeking technical and financial assistance. Attached to your packet, I provided a photocopy of Chapter 285B, Economic Development 2 from Oregon Revised Statute, just to give the committee's members that may not have had a chance to look at this, the variety and the tremendous amount of statute recently added to law with regard to all the various small business development funds, the agencies, the programs, and again, just to give you an idea of what all that looks like. Also attached to your packet is a letter from Eric Blackledge, who was the chair of the Governor's Small Business Council. And he indicates a lot of the same information that I've already read, and it's in your packet. With that, he couldn't be here today, so that is his submitted written testimony.
Chairman, no.
Thank you.
Candy Phillips is here today. She's a member of the Governor's Small Business Council. I think is prepared to at least read to you Eric Blackledge's testimony. I'd like to ask her to come up and join us.
That's great.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Candy Phillips. I own 2 small businesses based out of Salem. And Eric did want to express his regrets for not being able to be here with you, but he had to go to Italy. So in lieu of that, I'd like to read you. Yeah, it was really a necessity. What I said. Anyhow, I'd like to read you this statement because we feel real strongly about what we are presenting here to you today. As it says that Eric says that I am out of the country today, but appreciate the opportunity to present written comments to the committee regarding the Governor's Small Business Council's recommendations in support of House Bill 2858. As I think the committee knows, small business growth is the base of Oregon's economy. Based on the most recent information available from the U.S. Small Business Administration, Oregon had 278,000 small businesses in 1998, including 180,000 self-employed individuals. Small business made up over 97% of all Oregon businesses that have employees and provide over 733,000 jobs, which is almost 60% of all state employment. Even more importantly, small business, both in Oregon and nationally, are responsible for the vast majority of all net new job growth in the last few years. Many of the state's largest current employers started as Oregon small businesses, and some of today's small businesses may become the economic leaders in the future. Over the last 2 years, the Small Business Council has researched the needs of Oregon's small business and the status of the state's various programs to assist them. This process included a series of statewide small business roundtables and the first Oregon Small Business Summit held last June. The Council's report to the Governor and Legislature, which I've provided, identified a need to provide the coordination, marketing, and ability of small business assistance services. Number one, by improving the awareness and promotion of the services that already exist, by assuring easy access to information and support services, and by increased coordination of services to reduce the duplication and gaps in the services provided. To meet the objectives, the increase to, and to increase the effectiveness of the state's expenditures for supporting small business growth, the council recommended the establishment of an Office of Small Business within the Economic and Community Development Department. This office could better coordinate the state's many small business assistance programs and serve as an advocate for small business development within Oregon. At the federal level, where the importance of small business to the economy is well recognized, Congress has established a separate agency, the U.S. Small Business Administration, to provide this type of coordination. The SBA actually provides two functions for the federal government. First, it administers a wide range of small business development loan and education programs, similar to the finance and service contracting functions within the OECDD. But secondly, the agency also includes a separate Small Business Office of Advocacy with staffing and a congressional mandate to research and represent the needs of small businesses to the Congress, to the administration, and to the other federal agencies. Other states have also implemented coordinated offices of small business as recommended in House Bill 2825 and found them to be effective. House Bill 2825 was introduced as a committee bill by the House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, chaired by Representative Knope, is that right? to implement the council's recommendations by establishing an Oregon Office of Small Business. The council has reviewed House Bill 2858 and strongly supports its passage and inclusion as part of ORS Chapter 285. We would, however, recommend several amendments to make the legislation more effective. And those are listed, the two amendments right below there. And thirdly, we would suggest adding a new section to designate the Small Business Council as the official advisory commission to the Office of Small Business and a subsidiary advisory council to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission. This would be similar to the designation of the International Trade Commission in ORS Chapter 285, but using the membership composition requirements and responsibilities outlined for the Small Business Council in Governor Kitzhaber's Executive Order 98-14, which is also attached. Although the council is currently staffed by the Economic and Community Development Department, it actually currently has no official relationship with the department, and this would be a logical function for the council to perform. After reviewing the current staffing levels at OECDD and working with department staff to develop the minimum support requirements to implement the office and meet its objectives, the council will also recommend to the Ways and Means Committee, when it reviews the department's budget, the inclusion of up to $200,000 in additional appropriation for the next biennium to support an additional staff position and additional coordination costs during the transition biennium. If additional funding is not available, however, the Office of Small Business can still be established and operated within the department's recommended budget, but with a lesser degree of effectiveness. The Governor's Small Business Council recommends that you approve House Bill 2858 with the amendments that are attached. Thank you.
Did you guys wish to testify as well, or does that pretty much sum it up?
I just have some short comments.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman Knope, members of the committee. My name is Ron Fox. I'm manager of the Business and Industry Team at the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Within the Business and Industry Team of Economic and Community Development, we are charged with the assessment of need and delivery of business assistance to Oregon's small businesses. We have worked with the Governor's Small Business Council in the development of the council report issued to the Governor Kitzhaber in December of the year 2000. As a major recommendation of the council's report, we believe the creation of an Office of Small Business within the Economic Community Development Department will result in improved assistance and delivery of needed services to Oregon's small businesses. Working in conjunction with the council, we have researched other states with functions similar to those envisioned for the Office of Small Business. Four states, Iowa, Colorado, Pennsylvania, and Arizona, have functional units with some or portions of the activities outlined by the council's report. The closest example is Arizona's Department of Commerce, which hosts the Office of Small Business by incorporating business information along with coordination of small business service functions spread among various state agencies, acts as a policy watchdog for small business interests, and staffs a 23-member Small Business Executive Council to advise the Arizona governor. We think an Oregon Office of Small Business, as envisioned by the council's recommendation, could raise the recognition of the economic contributions of small business and improve the delivery of business assistance services to Oregon small business by working toward a seamless delivery system among all small business service providers. The Council's report defines a broad range of activities for the Office of Small Business, but notes the primary advantage for Oregon small business would be to ensure a system of coordinated service and policy among all agencies of the state of Oregon. In this expanded role, the Office of Small Business would be expected to add value to small business, not duplicate or replace the state agencies and staff that serve small business in a variety of capacities from numerous state agencies. The Office of Small Business would work with other state agencies to communicate the issues and needs of all Oregon small business. A sample of these other state agencies include Secretary of State's Business Information Center publishes the Oregon Business Guide and fulfills information requests from business and new ventures. The Oregon Transportation Department, which is the state's biggest contractor for small business construction and related services, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Small Business Ombudsman, training and advocacy resource for small businesses regarding insurance and other DCBS division policies, the Department of Administrative Service, Purchasing Division, the state's largest public contracting agency, founded the Department of Environmental Quality, which assists small business in meeting department requirements through individual consultation and group training activities. The Council report also recommends that the office develop and operate a clearinghouse for small business information, including services such as a 1-800 number for small business information, produce and distribute a small business directory, broker information and make referrals to other state agencies, and manage the development and operation of a central website for small businesses. These are only a few of the services the Office of Small Business would provide for Oregon small businesses. A complete listing of the Council's recommendation for the focus of the office is located on page 20 of the report by the Governor's Small Business Council, which you have before you today. As you know, this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. To operate its maximum capacity, the Council and the Department recognize that there would need to be an increase in, fiscal impact over our current operations. However, regardless of decisions made by the Ways and Means, we believe the establishment of the Office of Small Business with advice from the Small Business Council was necessary to improve the services provided to Oregon small business. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for our witnesses? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you defining small business?
Chairman Knope, Representative Kremel, I believe Oregon uses a 200 employee designation, although most of our services are directed at companies of 50 employees or less. But the statute, I believe, contains a 200 employee designation.
Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. I guess I'm trying to get a handle on what kind of direct sorts of services this council would be providing that are not already provided somewhere else.
I would like to make a comment as a small business owner. I have spent innumerable hours trying to get answers to very simple questions through the state system. I've ended up spending 8 solid hours on the phone calling one department to another, to another, to another, none of which I never did find the actual person with the information that I needed. I searched the web, or State of Oregon website, and instead I ended up hiring an attorney to try and, you know, navigate the myriad of different people I had to talk to over that 1-8-hour period. So a simple business question to increase the effectiveness of my operation, it was a huge hassle and very costly to both myself and I'm sure the state.
And what kind of business do you run?
I have a drug testing business and a crime scene cleanup business.
Okay, and number of employees?
I have about 22.
Care to keep the banter going, or?
Oh, okay. No, that'd be fine if that's all right with you.
Are you done, Representative Kremel? More.
No, I'm done.
All right, Representative Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a big fan of small business, as you know. I'm a small business owner myself, but I've got two questions for you. First of all, isn't there an Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business already in state government? And I guess in the interest of looking at a general fund appropriation in this time when we're looking at cutting budgets elsewhere
Is it possible that a particular entity of state government could be coordinated, transferred, redirected, or whatever to accomplish the means that you're talking about here?
You want to get back to me?
No, I think you do.
I'm very familiar with the Office of Women and Minority Business. I was actually number 88 in the state to certify, which means I've been certified for over 10 years. I have yet to get one single bit of support through that agency. They're primarily for Department of Transportation, women and minority business firms to acquire the bid percentages that are required. In fact, there is a piece up in front of the legislature to eliminate all women and minority business enterprises from certification from under ODOT, unless each particular state agency wants to put in an equivalent amount so that ODOT wouldn't have to fund the whole program. Does that make sense?
Follow?
Thank you. Well, it makes sense, but my question is, just because a particular entity isn't helping doesn't mean that then you just add another entity on top and then add again and add again. It seems like there's a way that you might want to just make more effective what already exists in state government rather than adding yet another position and $200,000 of general fund into the mix. It would be my
Up until this point, the Office of Women and Minority Business Development, they are primarily focused, they are mandated by the federal government to be in existence simply with the task of making sure that our federal dollars come in for road improvements. Therefore, that is their primary motivator, and none of the other services that our committee is interested in fall under that particular piece. There may be an opportunity to expand its services, but that would require some intensive research.
One more question.
Hello?
What is it regarding the amendment that having an, what are you calling this commission that you're creating? You're calling it a small business council? What would be the advantage to having a small business council in statute that you couldn't do under executive order currently?
Chairman Knopf, Representative Constance, I think the reason for the Sixth Commission made that recommendation was that the council currently exists under the governor's initiative. This would make it a continuous and permanent advisory group to the Office of Small Business. And that continuity, I think, was seen, and I think I would support it as an important advisory role to the department, the Office of Small Business, and I think to the other agencies within state government who have, as a part of their service provision, a focus on small business service.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Garrard.
Good afternoon. Did the council itself recommend this new Office of Small Business?
Mr. Chair, committee members. Yes, it was after our roundtable discussions throughout the state and, again, our business summit that we made the determination that that a small office, a one-stop shop for all types of business information and education would be the best appropriate method to use in helping small business grow and thrive in our state. And it was directly from the small business owners that came, they rated that as a high priority.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So this, the small business that you want to create, the office, its function would totally be as a research center for people wanting to know where to go, or would they actually be able to go there and get some help?
Chairman Knopf, Representative Girard. I think as envisioned by the council and their recommendations, as our discussions with the council in the development and subsequent issuance of the report, the idea would be that the office would function as the point in state government as a focus for all the services to small business. The council, I think, was very clear in their recommendation not to sort of pull from various state agencies people who currently provide or are focused, whose focus is on assistance and service to small business, but rather act as a coordinating function to bring the many agencies within state government together so that there would be a coordinated response to the small business inquiries made by
companies as much as can. So I think it's a coordinating function, not an assumption of responsibilities. And maybe Andy would like to speak to that.
Yeah, I can't express how frustrated it is as a business owner to try and get answers to simple questions and how much time is wasted on our end trying to find the answers. Ideally, the business owners across the state of Oregon, we found, really want to access this information to enhance their own company's growth and viability. We don't want to do things that aren't legal or aren't appropriate, but a lot of times we're just unable to find the information. And so having a clearinghouse would actually end up being an advocacy for us. Additionally, another piece, for myself personally, I have established percentage goals that I want to do more business with women and minority-owned firms. If individual corporations call, for example, our State of Oregon Women and Business Minority Office, they're not even given referrals to companies that meet those qualifications in the area. So we would like to have a resource guide. We want to know who all is out there because we could enhance our teaming efforts and cooperation to help grow our businesses together as well. So an enhanced one-stop shop that we can get the information, education, training, and other services to assist us would be, because most of the business owners across Oregon, we don't even know that there are programs that exist within the state of Oregon because we've never seen the information. So we would sure like to have that readily available for all.
Mr. Chairman, I would recommend maybe Representative Fremmel's Government Efficiency Committee should also maybe take a look at our function. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Representative Carrad. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that there are several state agencies that assist small businesses and that you had difficulty accessing them. Could you give me the names of some of those agencies who have a flavor for what you were trying to do and what your frustration was?
Well, one is the Secretary of State's office. I mean, you have to understand the political process, which unfortunately I don't, but I'm learning, to understand who does what within the state of Oregon. And they, even when you made the phone call and they would give you some minor answer, they didn't even know who to refer you to or what agency to send you to. So, like I said, it would be phone call after phone call for sometimes days on end and still never get that answer, that question answered. So Secretary of State, Department of Environmental Quality. I have real issues being that I do dispose of biohazardous waste and what the laws and rules. And, again, I ended up hiring an attorney to find those laws and regulations out for me, which cost me several hundred dollars because I was unable to get that information out of Salem or Portland, the DEQ. Other state agencies, DAS, Department of Administrative Services, regarding doing business with the state of Oregon. I've had a contract for many years, and yet a lot of times we get into glitches where I don't know where to go if I have problems with payment from the state, for example, up to 6 months in back payment due, and I'm unable to get the assistance that I need because I don't know, I didn't even know there was an ombudsman that could maybe assist in that endeavor. So that's just some short examples of things that I'm faced with on a daily basis.
Ms. Pollitt? Since a problem exists for accessing different departments of government, and we're all learning up here that's kind of confusing at times, would it seem appropriate to you that maybe some of those departments should give up some of their funds to form this group that would coordinate all their efforts?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, hallelujah, yes. Because I feel like, myself as an Oregon taxpayer, there's too much duplication and redundancy, and yet there is no one to go to when you're not getting the answers. And it appears from the outside that the agencies do not cooperate or talk to each other in their similar responsibilities. Maybe one thing the council has brought up is we would sure like to make these individuals part of the overall process and provide a means for them to meet and talk so they kind of know what each other does, because it's just a dead end each time. You have to start all over again with a new agency, not knowing who to talk to begin at that new agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who can address this. Can you tell me who's providing the support for the Governor's Small Business Council now?
Chairman Pelt, Representative Walker, let me introduce Jerry Hoffman. Jerry is the small business advocate within the department and has been the primary point person with the council.
I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. I'd like to go back to Representative Carlson in a minute and give you a little more insight into the minority and women business office, too, just to clarify something. Representative Walker.
Okay. Mr. Hoffman, so you are the point person between the Small Business Council now and Oregon Economic Development?
I am the staff chairman and Representative Walker. I am the small business advocate for economic and community development. I'm on the staff of the agency and was given the assignment when the executive order came down, was given the assignment to staff the Governor's Small Business Council as well. So it's an added responsibility.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I might point out to Representative Garrard on page 20 of this report, it outlines the reason why the Small Business Council wants an Office of Small Business. So let me ask you, Mr. Hoffman, in your position as a small business advocate, is this something that you think is necessary to facilitate small business
concerns? Representative Walker, yes. I think it's something that's needed in the state from the sense of making sure that we coordinate efforts between agencies. To give you a little history, over the last 3 years, we've had two small business service provider summits where we brought together representatives from small business assistance agencies to sit them down and talk about common concerns, common needs, et cetera. The first half of the first day of each of those conferences was spent introducing everybody to each other, which, in my view, says that if we don't know who each other are, then how does a small business identify the appropriate place to go to get help? That has been very helpful in giving us the direction that the council has now acted upon. And at their direction, I've also pulled together an advocates roundtable of agency representatives, many of the ones that Mr. Fox mentioned to you earlier, to sit down and talk about these common issues and see if we can't make some headway on duplicate paperwork, multiple places where people are going to get the same information, and also working together with several other state agencies to build a small business website.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
Do you think that OECDD now has an ability to administer and release money to small business providers in an efficient and equitable manner?
Yes, I think we do. I think we're doing that now. We have a budget of about $3.4 million that we put out in contracts every year with the Small Business Development Center Network and about six or seven other private contractors or private nonprofit contracting agencies. And I think we do a good job of that. I don't think that the purpose of the Office of Small Business would be necessarily to expand that, but certainly to coordinate funding strategies between agencies that have small business assistance responsibilities so that we're not multiply funding the same people or people are falling through, agencies are falling through the cracks because we're not providing the appropriate service.
And a final question, if I might?
Final question.
Thank you. No one has yet responded, though. Candy, I'm sorry, I don't have your last name right here. Candy Phillips. Ms. Phillips did read the testimony of Eric Blackledge, but I don't know where the two of you stand on the amendments that he's proposed. So can you respond to that?
Representative Knopf, Representative Walker, we include, our support includes their amendments. The amendments as issued in Eric Blackledge and Candy.
Okay. And those amendments are not prepared in legislative form? They're just attached here.
Not at this point, Representative Walker. We're going to order those amendments to be added to the bill before it goes anywhere.
Okay.
And maybe we'll rent it out to the Government Efficiency Committee to take a look at it as well. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2858. And we'll look to bring it back at a later date. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2556, the last bill that we're going to hear today. Representative Butler, I'll let you go as soon as we let our committee administrator tell us a little bit about the bill. How about that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2556 renames and adds the food bank institution to the definition of the Health, Housing, Education, and Cultural Facilities Authority. It redefines health care institution to include mental health care and residential drug or alcohol treatment services. Requires annual filing of a statement of economic interest for facilities authority board members. It authorizes expenditure from the facilities authority investment account for real property financing and refinancing for food bank institutions and healthcare institutions providing mental health care and drug or alcohol treatment services. Currently, no state funds provide financial support for the structures and associated food bank institutions in Oregon. Funding for food bank institution facilities may degrade amounts distributed to other facility authority programs. The Health, Housing, Education, and Cultural Facilities Authority derives its funding from bonds issued by the state treasurer. The Oregon Investment Council oversees all issue of bonds for the Facility Authority Investment Account.
We welcome the representative who represents about one quarter of Oregon's landmass, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom Butler from House District 60, and presently my House District includes 34% of the landmass of the state of Oregon. As I understand it, may get larger yet. Colleagues, let me first explain a couple of issues relative to House Bill 2556. First of all, you need to understand for just a moment that there is an institution within a director and one staff person or a part-time staff person, as I recall, that constitute a small organization that takes care of some private activity bonds in the state of Oregon. It's called HECFA. That's not to be misconstrued with HICFA. It's a different organization entirely. This is the Health, Housing, Education, and Cultural Facilities Authority. Let me now go on and tell you just a little bit about the bonding issue itself. Private activity bonds are authorized under the Constitution and within statute for the state of Oregon, or by the state of Oregon. This is where we can allow, this is not a general obligation bond, nor is it any obligation of the state of Oregon. This is an obligation of the facility that is borrowing. There are quite a number, I think 30 or 40 different kinds of programs presently that are borrowing under the bonding authority of the current HECFA organization. And I'll just call it the authority, because that's what it is. And there's at least three iterations of issues dealing with HECFA out in the marketplace right now that we may see during this legislative assembly. One is as to a name change only, and that isn't this one. The name change, when you're all done adding a few more opportunities to it, would just be the Oregon Public Facilities Authority. I talked to Director William Love about that at one time, and he said, I don't want public facilities funding, it'd just be the Public Facilities Authority. So there is another iteration of this particular issue. This particular iteration, House Bill 2556, adds the food banks and alcohol and drug treatment facilities. And let me just explain to you what the reasoning behind that was. Originally, when I was in contact with Director Love relative to what he was doing, I called as a member of the state Debt Policy Advisory Commission to find out what it was that Mr. Love was doing within the authority, and got some idea of what kinds of programs we were involved in. And he said, as a matter of fact, he said, I'm just right now reading a opinion, or a, I'm not sure whether it was an opinion or a clarification, it may have been an opinion, from the Attorney General's office, which will give me authority to proceed to take care of a food bank, bonding a food bank. And so I asked him, under the health portion of it, what it had relative to alcohol and drug residential treatment facilities. And he said, well, I could go ahead, we could go ahead and ask for an Attorney General's opinion on that as well. So rather than seek an Attorney General's opinion for anything that came along, I asked him if it would be appropriate for me to go ahead and ask for authority to include the food bank institutions and to include residential drug and alcohol treatment facilities. Now, if I were to come to the authority today and seek authorization for bonding, he's got some limitations under which he would go ahead and proceed to begin the application process. But if the bonds are not going to sell, he's not going to take the time to spend the spend his wheels on trying to get someone to bond something that doesn't look like it'll go. Usually it has to have rather significant amounts of assets pledged by some other nonprofit organization or other community institution. In the case of the food bank, you probably, I think it was a Metropolitan Portland Metropolitan Food Bank, you probably have a seniors program that has some of their own land, building, and other facilities that are all free and clear, substantially free and clear, and they were going to go ahead and add a food bank, a actual structure on the subject site, and so as collateral, they were going to pledge maybe $3 million for a $1 million special private activity bond purpose, and then they would be funding it out of their own organization. Again, you do not use the good faith and credit, the full general obligation, good faith and credit of the state of Oregon backs these bonds. It does not. It merely allows a tax-free bond to be used for the authority's purpose. And so what, and there is a third iteration of this bill that's outstanding out there where education will be, the funding for education will be changed. That's a different discussion for a different time, and I'd like you not to get that mixed up. The education, the scope of education is not changed under this particular iteration, and that's why I wanted this to stand alone. This merely adds, at this particular time, relative to the authority that the lending authority for the private activity bonds that the authority presently has, it adds the definition of food bank, that's for the distribution of food, participating in food bank institution, a structure or structure suitable for the use of food storage or distribution facilities, administration buildings, maintenance, storage, and utility facilities, food processing structures and facilities, other structures, so forth and so on. You can read that. But it adds that, and then it also adds the residential drug or alcohol treatment facilities. And I'm particularly sensitive to this because I have had some minimal exposure to these mental health type facilities that are benefiting the residential drug and alcohol treatment programs, and they just don't have a place where they can go when they have $2 million worth of facility all paid for, and they need to add a gymnasium or something of that nature. And so I became aware of one of these facilities in the state of Oregon a good program has plenty of assets, but just can't, has to go to the regular banking source to borrow, as opposed to being able to use the private activity bonds of tax-free nature the state of Oregon could provide by lending its bonding authority. So that's the primary issue, and I've tried to nibble around the edges to make sure that you understood what was involved here. This does not further encumber the folks in the state of Oregon. It merely allows those people that come to the existing authority to go ahead and ask for the opportunity to place an application before Director Love, and then have him process it if he feels like that there might be a market for those private activity bonds.
Any questions? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why is there a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, I don't know. Unless in this process, I really don't know why all of the operating, as far as I understand, most all of the operating facility comes out of the authority when they float a bond issue as it presently is. I'm sorry that I can't tell you why there is a subsequent referral here. We'll be responsible. We'll find out when it gets to Ways and Means.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
How do the agencies who are impacted by this bill, such as the Oregon Food Bank, feel about it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, the folks from the food bank, this gives them another avenue. It does not preclude them from going through their standard sources, seeking any other funds, and typically that's what will happen is the majority of those funds will come from a third-party source, and this could be the bridge financing. Now, I must say at that point, Representative Walker and members of the committee, that typically you don't go out and float a bond for $50,000. For $500,000 or $700,000 or $1 million, yes. But for $50,000 or for something, just a bridge loan, the costs of structuring the bonds and so forth, and the cost of the authority, it wouldn't be worthwhile. So this is for a rather major need, and the folks would be pledging rather substantial resources and assets. Again, this money is not lent on the private activity bond, anticipating the state of Oregon will back it up. It's based upon the private activity itself.
Thank you.
Representative Butler, the private activity bonds, though, it would use some of the bonding capacity. We would be lending the bonding, part of our bonding capacity to these organizations. So therefore, maybe that's why they suggested that it goes to Ways and Means. So you could take a look at it down in your committee, possibly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That we do, and that does bring to my attention, yes, that then each session we have to, at the end of the session, approve all of the total bonding capacity of all bonds that will be issued or the upper limit. I think within the authority presently, they have ample authority to continue to issue. Again, this is not based upon the percentage of the fair market value of the state of Oregon. It's basically private activity by private activity that these are issued. But yes, I would think that we would approve at least the activities of the authority during a normal legislative session.
Right. Question over here.
You asked the question I was going to ask.
Okay. Representative Brown, did you have a question?
Yes. How are these bonds retired? What revenue sources are these private organizations? I understand how they're collateralized. You got the building there to hold them.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Brown, the organization, the bond will be structured based upon what the organization anticipates that it will have as resources. In the case of a food bank, the food bank would anticipate that it would receive certain revenues similar to our revenue flows or the certificates of participation, if you will, and relative to the mental health portion related to residential drug and alcohol treatment facilities, they would anticipate retiring that portion of the debt the same as they would be retiring any other non-authority debt, and that would be through treatment programs. And again, the bond itself is collateralized by the actual physical facility. I hope that's sufficient. In other words, the facility itself, they don't ever look to the state. They may, however, if it were a mental health facility or A&D treatment program, for instance, and they have contracts with county, regional, or state agencies, they may anticipate that those would fund the payoff, but they can't pledge that, and it's based pretty much like a mortgage on your home.
Thank you. Representative Krummel, did you have a question?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I know you're shocked, but
I must say I'm not disappointed. So that means we may be done here.
Yeah, good question.
Any other, yes, indeed. Any other questions for Representative Butler? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No,
anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2556?
seeing no one, we will close the public hearing. And this needs a referral to Ways and Means, and I would entertain a motion if the committee is so inclined.
So moved.
Okay, well, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2556. Got to get the right number. Representative Bates?
I would recommend we move House Bill 2556 to Ways and Means with without recommendation.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation.
Oof. That's brutal. That's brutal, Representative Bates.
Let's discuss it. I mean, what we don't know is how much these bonds are going to cost and how much they're going to affect the bonding issues of the state. That's the only negative I heard. Is that correct?
That's true.
And the positives are we're number one in the country in hunger, and we're right up there in the top echelon as far as drug abuse problems, too. I mean, this is a good public policy. If you'd like to move it with a due pass, I would be.
I would move it with a due pass, but we've got to have the votes to do that. What do other members of the committee think?
Due pass.
I would say send it with a due pass.
Yeah?
I'm in favor of a due pass.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Representative Bates.
Amend the motion.
Representative Bates has moved that we send House Bill 2556 to Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Chair.
Representative Monasanis.
And maybe someone on the committee can answer this question for me, but are there other groups like Food Bank that would need to be added to this list? And again, if each entity comes and wants to be added to the authority, the Facilities Authority Investment Account, is this starting a precedent? Is this out of the ordinary? I'm just worried about our bonding capacity, and so...
The only negative I saw, too. I agree.
Yeah. And I'm worried about the acronym getting longer.
I think that anybody who wants to be added from here on out is going to have to prove that the length of the name is worth adding this. How's that?
Put the word food bank between facilities.
Any other comments?
I'm just trying to figure out how you'd pronounce the acronym.
Mr. Chair, on a serious note,
certainly.
I think that as we look at the various aspects of the authority and what it's for, Food Bank is although you may not want it to be kind of a generic term, but I think when you look at all of the parts of the authority, they're kind of generic in nature, and I think Food Bank is the same way, because there can be several organizations that can be providing food bank type of activities, but from the standpoint of the bonding authority, and yes, I'd be a little bit concerned about the capacity, but at the same time, if there's a reasonable opportunity to that may not be in existence otherwise without the state of Oregon being able to lend its support, and I think that it's a way that we can lend that support without it actually costing the state of Oregon any money.
I think the policy issue here is sound, and I think that's what we're looking at. And we've looked at the baseball stadium as a potential sucking sound for bonds, and real investment won't be far behind it. So I would put food at the top of the list, since I tend to eat some now and again. Any other comments before we go to the vote? Seeing and hearing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Excuse?
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Canope?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2556 is moved to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2556. Committee, that concludes our agenda for the day. I do need to warn you, however,
that the lights may still be on in your offices and you may still have staff there. And I know this is a situation. This is a situation that I bring up because I know this has never happened to you before.
Never.
On a Monday, Wednesday, or a Friday.
Well, I've never.
So I just warn you in advance that this could be the case.
Your skillful leadership.
And with that, we will adjourn committee.